This meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll?
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Ruben Vonderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And we have Pastor Chris Bent from Calvary here.
Well, let's pray. Heavenly Father, we are grateful as always that we live in this country where we have been allowed by you to govern ourselves, to make decisions that affect citizens of the city as well as the council, as well as police and fire departments and trash collectors and so many different people. And Lord, I pray that the decisions that are made tonight would honor you, that would reflect your desires for this town, that would be the best for the citizens, and find a balance between the citizens and those making those decisions. So we thank you for this chance and pray for not only your blessing, but your presence at this meeting. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you very much. And if you join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item is the consent agenda. Questions, comments, or motion to approve?
I have just like two really tiny changes.
Okay.
The first one is the title to resolutions under C1. So I would just like to move the words replace. Move the words to replace two members who resigned, move that to the end. So it would read, a resolution of the City Council for CUNA, Idaho, appointing two new members to the City of CUNA, Idaho Development Impact Fee Advisory Committee for the City Police Department to replace two members who resigned. It's minor, but if you read it the original way, it makes much less sense. Is that it?
Good.
Sorry, hang on just a second. Oh, I think that's probably it. So with that change, I move we approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda with the amendment on C1. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor? Oh, Chris, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Ruben Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. The next thing we have is a public hearing. This is consideration to approve 18-01-PUD MOD, planned unit development modification. Troy? Oh, there's Troy. He's getting our paper. Thank you, kind sir.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Just for the record, Troy B. Hinnon, Planner 3, CUNA Planning and Zoning Department. I'm not really sure where the applicant is. They posted the site for the public hearing, and they held a neighborhood meeting, and maybe something's come up. So anyway, I'll lead off. So this is a situation that's kind of unfortunate. The final plat, when it went through its beginning processes, inadvertently there were four lots that were created on corner lots that didn't anticipate a side yard setback, and they were very narrow. And out of the 211, I think that's not a large number, just four lots. So what the applicant is requesting is that the side yard setback for the oh, here's the applicant. So what the request is, okay, well, let me back up. Sorry. So I just got thrown off here. The requirement in CUNA code is that the setback for the house on the street side of a house on a corner lot is measured from the back of curb. From the right-of-way. And the request, because of the narrow nature of these lots, the request is to, through the PUD modification process, is to modify that measurement from the right-of-way to the back of sidewalk. The result really is only just a few feet of overall difference between the actual street and the side of the house. And I just want to highlight that it is only the street side of these corner lots. It is not house to house. It's not back of house to side of house. It's just the side of the house next to the street. The overall impact really is only going to be felt by probably only a few people who actually even know what the code is. And I think that the greatest difference is about 2.5, maybe 3 feet. Other than that, I think most people are going to completely be unaware that there's even a change. And again, the affected neighbor really is only going to be the people in the street next to the house. Other than that, it did get passed and recommended for approval from the Planning and Zoning Commission on June 26th of this year. Staff does support this, and we believe that this is the best way to handle these narrow lots due to it being a PUD, which is it does give certain design criteria license to the developer. Anyway, I would stand for any questions you might have. I'm sure you might have some questions. Becky just walked in, so she might be able to answer some of those questions too.
Okay, questions for Troy?
I'm not sure if I don't think I didn't see it in here, so please forgive me if it is in here and tell me where I can find it. Will this affect line of sight at all, like with the fences being out a little bit closer, trying to see around the corners and that sort of thing?
It should not affect the line of sight at all for any of the houses.
Okay. For people driving is
for people driving.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Realistically, the blind spot for drivers around a corner would be really at the front setback. The front setbacks are not changing, not requested for change, because the 6 foot fence requirement requires that 20 feet in back of the sidewalk, which is basically flush with the front of the house. That's really where the pinch point comes in to play with corner and line of sight. But that's a very good question.
Okay, thank you.
This won't impact where the fence is built. It just impacts really where the home is built. So it's going to, in theory, right? Is that how I'm interpreting
it? It will affect the fence on the side yard a little bit, but it shouldn't create any line of sight issues at all. But it will affect the fences on the side.
So for these lots, the fences will be closer to the sidewalk than on other.
They actually will be slightly closer, yes. I believe one of the lots only has a request for about 1 foot 6 inches or 1 foot 3 inches. It's very, very minor.
Okay. Further questions for Troy?
No.
No, thank you. Becky McKay, did you want to present? If you would just state your name and address for the record.
I'm Becky McKay with Engineering Solutions, business address 1029 North Rosario in Meridian. I apologize to the mayor and the council for my lateness. I got caught in construction. It was just like, you're stuck. You've been there. The application that's before you, as Troy indicated, we worked with the staff to try to figure out a solution. We had four corner lots in Timber Mist, 2 and 3. And the reason those corner lots kind of got narrowed up was due to storm drainage demands by ACHD. ACHD kind of asked for additional area for storm drainage and easements, and so the engineer, the design engineer, kind of thought, well, you know, these lots are wider than the lots that are not corner lots, and so we can obviously make them a little bit narrower. Then, as Toll Brothers or Coleman Homes decided to build on the lots, they started putting their different model sizes on there, and we obviously became aware that we've got a problem. And as Troy said, the problem varied, you know, like from 1.5 feet on one lot to a little bit more on another lot. So our best solution for the problem was we didn't feel that a variance was appropriate because we did not obviously have some site constraint or hardship. But since we did have a planned unit development that was approved with our Timber Mist preliminary plat, we decided that a PUD modification was the best way to handle that. Your attorney did also take a look at that option and came to the same conclusion. So I've worked closely with your staff over the past few months to, you know, put this application together. And as he indicated, it will not affect the vision triangles whatsoever. You know, the problem arises that we have detached sidewalks with an 8-foot landscape strip that are treed, and then we have a 5-foot walk at the outside of that landscape strip. So in order to try to have a nicer subdivision with parkways, then our setback based on your ordinance is measured from the back of sidewalk, not from the right-of-way. So for just these four lots on that street side setback, all other setbacks remaining the same, we're asking that that measurement be taken from the right-of-way. And I did have two neighborhood meetings with the adjoining residents, got their input. At first, they were a little bit alarmed, but after the second meeting, they said, could you bring us back more detailed site plan showing fencing and landscaping and sidewalks? So I did go back with a second meeting, showed it to them, and they go, oh, you know, we don't have a problem with that. You know, we want Coleman Homes to build on these lots. We don't want to see them sold to another builder that may build a smaller home or a home that's inferior to ours. And so therefore, the consensus at the meeting from everyone that attended said, I'm for this. We think this is a great idea. And so at the Planning Zoning Commission, we had no neighbors in opposition or with concerns, and they unanimously recommended approval, and we'd ask that the council approve this tonight. May I answer any questions?
Okay. Questions?
No.
Does any of that remove any common area that maybe some of these other residents were relying on? Do you know the common areas in the neighborhoods, or was this just really the setbacks along the side of the yard that you were talking about with just the basic landscaping?
Mr. Mayor, Councilman Christensen, it does not impact any of the common areas that are calculated into our open space or are usable as far as amenities, no.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you. All right. This is a public hearing. We didn't have anyone sign up to testify. Was there anybody who wished to do so and didn't get a chance? Okay. So as a matter of procedure, we need to go ahead and open the public hearing. And I'll ask one more time, is there anybody who wishes to testify in this case? If none, we have a motion to close the public hearing.
I move we close the public hearing.
Second. Motion's made and seconded to close the public hearing. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And the question is rightfully before council.
The packet is pretty descriptive, along with the presentation. I don't have any questions or concerns about it. Doesn't appear to me that the request conflicts with the comp plan at all, nor with state code. And it sounds like it would be a good thing for the subdivision in terms of maintaining the look that the residents are hoping for. So with that in mind, I move we approve case number 1801 PUD MOD with the conditions of approval as listed.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve 18-01-PUD MOD with the conditions listed. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. Thank you very much. Next we have consideration to approve resolution R47-2018, J&M sanitation fee schedule. Chad Gordon.
Mayor, council members, for the record, Chad Gordon, operations manager, J&M Sanitation, 688 Swamp Falls Road, Keuna, Idaho. We're just presenting you with the resolution for annual CPI, and the CPI is based upon Northwest Region Transportation 3.48%, and we'll put it out there for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Chad?
No questions.
No.
Thank you. And I don't believe that you did an increase last year. Is that
we didn't
right?
do an increase last year yeah. Because we did roll out the recycling program. And so with that said, you know, we came for it this year.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is for Chad. There's a note in it. Thank you. It's not as cool as you think. I think a couple years ago, I think we talked about whether we could like automatically include the increase, and we can't. It has to be something that they bring to us every single year. So as of at least a couple of years ago, I know that I was in favor of automatically approving these if they're needed. So I move we approve resolution R47-2018.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve resolution R47-2018. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much for your excellent service. We always get a lot of compliments for the job that you do, so. And we are more than happy to take credit for it. So. All right, thank you. Next item is consideration to appoint Jared Empey to city treasurer. And Jared is here. If you want to come on up. So what we did was we put Jared's resume. This is something we can't really do publicly, so we let you have that to look at, but I will say that Jared did a heck of an interview. In fact, he actually interviewed us more than we interviewed him, so everybody was very impressed by that. So, Jared, welcome.
Thank you.
If you want to address council or...
No, I wasn't sure what the procedure was.
It doesn't matter too much. I mean, if there's anything you want to say or...
I'm just excited for the opportunity to serve and hope to get to work soon.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Jared?
Mm.
No.
Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So, actually, we just need a motion to appoint Jared Empey to the city treasurer position. And I'm sorry, what was the effective date? The 4th?
The 4th, yeah.
Okay. I move we approve the appointment of Jared Empey to city treasurer effective September 4th.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to appoint Jared Empey to the position of city treasurer September 4th. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Jared. Welcome.
Thank you.
Anything you want to stop in or talk about or whatever in between now and then, always feel free. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I will say that was a search that was a little intense. We were John had been with us for a long time, so replacing John we knew wasn't going to be an easy deal, and we're pretty happy with the choice here. So next item is discussion on EDU calculations. Bob Boxton, Public Works Director. We do have this listed as an action item, but what we're wanting to do here tonight is, I'll let Bob explain it, but mostly we want to provide some information for you all to consider.
Mayor and Council, thank you. For the record, Bob Bachman, City CUNA Public Works Director. I just wanted to kind of walk through this process with you guys and kind of discuss what brought us to this point and what I've found since I've been Public Works Director and involved in the EDU assignments or allocations, however you want to put it. Basically, back in about January was the first, January of 2018 was the first time I was involved in assessing what a business or would be charged for EDU. So immediately I kind of saw that there were some holes in the system. It was almost more of a negotiation than it was a black and white chart that said, you have a pizza place, you get this. You have a hair salon, you're charged this. I brought those to the mayor some time ago. He asked me to kind of look into the system, see where the holes are in it, see if there's another way to do it. I put together a few different ideas of what the other cities and surrounding areas are doing. The City of CUNA is currently using Exhibit 1, which is Sheet 4 of 6, 7C. As you can see, there's a chart we go by right now that has really kind of has a lot of gray areas in it, in my opinion. There's multiple times where Don and I will collaborate, get together, and vet out how to properly allocate the EDUs, and it just seems through that process to me that it should be a little bit more black and white than that. We could spend several phone calls, several emails, or whatever it is to get to the result of how we should be charging those EDUs. So part of the rate study that I brought to you guys a couple council meetings ago, part of that was to look at this EDU stuff, and I kind of had them fast-track this just so we can get this in front of you because it's a more immediate issue to discuss. And this is kind of what we came up with, what the other areas are doing. What I would like to do is take all three models with the committee that we set up at the last council meeting and bring you guys in and involve you and take all three models and run a bunch of different scenarios through those models, graph it, bring it back to you guys, and show you under Exhibit 1 what it looks like, Exhibit 2 what it looks like, and Exhibit 3, and just see if we're which one's the closest. And what we can do is we can take what we charged them in the past, their water usage currently to use that number, base that number off of, and we can graph that under all three scenarios. And I've already done that to a small scale, but I think we need to take a bigger picture at it of it and really involve you guys so you understand. Not necessarily from me, but from a consultant that does this for a living, where we came up with the three different ideas and how that looks from a bigger snapshot. I will tell you that the quick, I'm not say quick, because I've been looking at this for quite some time. If you look at Exhibit 2, it's much more black and white from the standpoint of it's based on meter size. If you have a 3/4 inch meter, you charge this. If you have a 1/2 inch meter, it's charged that. I like the idea of having something that straightforward, but I'm not positive that one shoe fits all for us. So I think by running the scenarios and with all three charts, it'll give us a very clear and precise example of exactly what we should be using. And maybe it does end up we stay with the exhibit, one and the chart we currently use. But I think it's worth taking a fair look at and making sure that we are getting this stuff correct. And not only that, maybe take a little bit of human error out of it by having a chart that is somewhat subjective. Example of that, halfway down, if you guys have this chart, mine is really fuzzy, so hopefully your guys' is better. If you go down, what's the difference between fine dining and restaurant dining? I mean, things like there's a bunch of those little holes in there that are a little too subjective, and quite honestly, it comes down to an opinion on what fine dining is versus not fine dining. And when you're talking a lot of seats in a restaurant, that could end up being a big difference. And I think it's just worth the time for us to vet this out, run some scenarios, and make sure we really got the best tool at our hands to use to be accurate as possible. The second part of this is the mayor and I talked several months ago, and you can see in the bottom of my memo, I called around to other public works directors, other cities. This year at AIC, I had the opportunity to sit down with other public works directors and just ask them, how do you guys do this? What do you do for existing buildings? What do you do for new construction versus old construction versus downtown versus this versus, yeah, I even took it to residential. What are you guys doing on multifamily? Because we've had some people that thought we were doing that incorrectly, which I could happily report back. Everybody's doing that the same way we are. But the one thing I did find is on existing construction, the people I talk to are not allocating, going back and allocating EDUs to these people. They are giving credit for past uses of the buildings. So, and what I mean by that is if you have a business that started in 1990 and had seven businesses through it to 2000, they were treating those businesses as past uses and as if they had a past hookup and carrying that forward. So under the scenario I put in my memo, an example of that would be if you had a retail store that was office space only that required a minimum of one EDU, you moved a hair salon in that had, I think I used four stations, which is a higher demand than the previous EDU, or sewer hookup fee, then they would pay the difference between the one that they should have already owned versus what the demand on the system actually is. So if you take the 1.8 minus the one, they should pay 0.8. And that seems to be the norm for around the valley, all the way into Ontario we looked. And I can say that I asked Lisa to also take a look at it from economic development standpoint and talk to her resources to see what she could find to see if there was another avenue or another thing we're missing. And I don't want to speak for her, but she did tell me that she basically found the same thing I did. And she can, if you guys, obviously she's more than, you know, happy to speak to that if you want her to. But
obviously she looks more like Lisa than you do.
Yeah. So, that was kind of the basics behind what I wanted to bring this to you tonight, just to let you guys know that we are looking at this. I do think that I would like to get the panel together that we talked about at the last meeting and just run through a bunch of scenarios and then bring a permanent solution, you know, to the back to council for a vote. But I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Questions for Bob?
Not a question. I appreciate that approach. I think it makes sense to really think about how the different ways of doing it might affect different businesses and see what seems the fairest, or if we need to try to come up with some sort of weird hybrid of several. So sounds like a good approach to me, and I appreciate the effort.
And then one caveat to that is we do have a settlement agreement with KeyBank, so we will have to make sure that we go through there and that we don't violate any of that. That's something that we don't want to do at any point. So we just want to make sure everything meshes. I know some of the calculations Bob ran, it actually looks like it was a better deal for KeyBank than the system we're currently using. So I think that's just kind of one of those things that the committee is going to have to look at as you go through and assess these. So Thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate all your work on that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks.
And then also tying into that then, kind of more or less, is item D. This is a request for review and appeal of EDU calculations for 345 North Avenue E, Enrique's Mexican Restaurant, Enrique Contreras, and Ana Paz owners. I don't know if you guys want to go ahead and present, and we'll kind of continue to discuss.
Hi, everyone. For the record, my name is Ana Paz, 1922 West Ardell, Kuna, Idaho, 83634. And this is Enrique.
Yeah, for the record, I'm Enrique, Contreras, 1922 West Ardell, Kuna, Idaho.
Well, what brings us here today is a letter or a request letting us know that we are needing to pay 11.1 EDUs. And just going back to your chart showing how to figure the EDUs for the property, we never came up with, well, we did come up with 11.1, but after reviewing the letter that we did receive from Gordon Law back when we applied for the permit in 2015, it did show that any demand provided in previous building permits is credited and the applicant is charged for fees only for increased demands. I did bring a copy of that letter. I do have some, everything that we did print out, I do have some printouts, if I can hand those out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just make sure Chris gets one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I hand?
Just Chris needs one.
So after calculating according to your fee, you know, how you guys figure it, this is what we came up with. After having all the different businesses that went through, not sure if everybody remembers Cowgirls Event Center with Shirley Leffler's, and then also Sandstone Winery with the previous owners, and then as well with the previous owners with the commercial kitchen. Mm-hmm. They canned or pickled asparagus and stuff like that. And then on the end part of our building, the Body Complete salon was there and had a lot of stations. I can't remember exactly how many, but we have pictures of all the stations. And we've had many appraisals on that property, and the appraisals took plenty of pictures, so we do have proof of how many stations they have. And then the last business that went through there was Simple Perfections, which calculated two EDUs. So after reducing all of their use, the 9.4, so what we came up with was 1.7 that we owed. So we do understand that we owe something, but according to what we were being charged, doesn't seem, or what I guess what I'm asking is if you guys can explain to me how the city came up with the total that we are needing to pay.
I'm nodding, but I can't.
So what occurred there, basically, we staff and myself had a meeting in my office, and we had a discussion on what we felt was there and what the total should be, and that's kind of how we came up with that. And again, it kind of goes back to what Bob was talking about. There's just some times where this doesn't make complete sense. I wish it was simple and I could just give you a good reason as to where that number came from. There was calculations and there was a rhyme and a reason to it. However, I can't tell you that you're wrong and we were right. So that's kind of why we brought this to council. They obviously that's quite a difference in price. So we wanted to bring it to council and get your input on that. I don't know if Bob or Wendy, anybody wants to talk about how we came up with the other numbers? That's just kind of where we're at with this. It's just not a clear-cut case. And
so I guess my questions would be, how does this interface with the next item on the agenda, the agreement, and then if there is some, if our decision would be like, let's wait and find out what the study portends and what we want to do, does that negatively impact their ability to move forward with opening and that sort of thing? And if so, how can we fix that so it doesn't?
So this agreement, we came up with this agreement so that we could give them their
occupancy.
We can wait. The one thing that we do need to do is when we pay these EDUs to KeyBank, we need to know that number by the end of September so those can be calculated so we can pay for them in the current quarter. Otherwise, we pay for them too late, which isn't fair to KeyBank. So that's the push on this, but it still does give us a little time to look through this.
Okay.
So it's certainly appropriate if you would like to spend some more time, and I would think that it's going to be something you really can't make a decision on tonight, but it would be appropriate to table this and take a deeper look at it. And
is the agreement that was signed, is that the outcome you'd like, or that factors in the 11 EDUs or the much higher amount, and so if we were to reduce it, then that agreement would become null, or what's, yeah, somebody share with me on that one.
So, honestly, I felt like we had to sign it just to get our occupancy, so it was just like we had to do what we had to do to get our business going, and after having it, you know, our construction going for a whole year and investing all that money, we couldn't go back, so it's like, we just moved forward and thought that, you know, well, we know that if we didn't sign it, we weren't going to get occupancy. So, but when we first got that letter back in March, we educated ourselves and pulled a bunch of public records showing all this stuff of inconsistency. And like they said, just anybody charging whatever, you know, whoever they wanted or whatever, and somebody got charged $50 while somebody got charged $10,000, or somebody got charged $200 when somebody got charged $25. So it was just so, and the businesses according, you know, and I know that chart wasn't there back in the day, but just inconsistency. And the only thing we ask is we all be treated fairly and equally. And I don't know how having so many businesses start construction, and maybe you can explain to me how they chose us. Well, first of all, they didn't charge us when we first applied for the permit, so we were already into building. And I don't know where that fell in the loopholes, but I don't feel we need to be punished for, you know, We went, applied, and not our fault that somebody, that it slipped through.
So basically this agreement is not valid unless council approves it.
Okay.
So basically right now all we have is a guarantee to the city that we will be able to collect this if this is what council decides that they owe.
Okay.
You don't have to. We can table this as long as we, and as well as table the other. But basically this is just they have agreed to pay this if that's the worst case scenario and that's what we decide they got to pay.
We don't agree. I mean, we signed the paper, but we don't agree to pay.
Right.
If you guys don't credit any of that, it'd be you.
Right.
But I don't think it's right for us to pay the whole amount.
Right. So if we...
So in essence, you'd like us to make a decision on how many EDUs we think is appropriate before we would affect the agreement, and because the agreement might not even be affected depending on what the decision is. Yeah? Okay. So I guess my question for Bob would be, how long do you think your studying and charting and whatnot will take? Like, do we imagine that we would have actionable data and enough time to make a decision before the end of September?
I think it would be tough but doable. I don't want to put a whole lot of strain on utility billing right now because they are short-staffed, and a lot of the information I'll need will have to come from them. With that said, Greta, Nancy, and Bill and all of them do a great job of turning around the information.
Is there any way to get you just access to that system so you can pull yourself?
I don't know.
I'm just spitballing.
I believe Gordon had access to it at one point, and we have talked about trying to get that back.
Maybe it could be like not like read write, like just read access, not write access, you know,
right.
So you can't go fiddle with stuff.
I think it's doable. It'll be tough, but I think we can probably come up with something.
Well, I guess a greater question to the mayor or whomever then, given the, as I understand it, end of September deadline for needing to figure this out, what's the proposed way of moving forward?
Well, mostly it was a matter of whether or not council wanted to work through this, and I assumed that you would, but the other part of this, I mean, if we go through this calculation by statute, after a year we can review this. The only thing is after a year and we review this, would not refund them the number of EDUs that they pay for. All it would do is reduce the billing. So I don't know that we can actually go to a new chart or a new way of figuring this. I think mostly what they're saying is that they deserve more credits than we've given them. And so I think that's kind of the key of what we need to look at.
Okay.
Based on the fact that the city has under ordinance this way of calculating right now, I don't believe that we can change that and then go to a new system. I'm not sure that that would benefit them anyway from what I've seen of that. I think that's the key is what they're credited for. So I think that's what, I don't know, Bob, if you would agree with that or.
Mayor, I think the issue is how do we charge EDUs for new construction? And how do we treat existing construction is the issue. I do believe the mayor's right. I think we have to stick to the chart that we're currently using. I think what we have to determine and our policy doesn't address is how do we treat existing buildings when we charge them for EDUs. That's the real meat and potatoes of the question is, and I can honestly say from what I've seen, we are all over the board on it. It's been a little bit, we haven't had a lot of them because a lot of our older businesses have been there for a long time, but there have been cases that show a little bit of discrepancy on how we charge them. So I think that's the real question, and what we need to do is create a policy that addresses exactly how we handle the existing buildings when they change use.
No, that makes sense. So this is my suggestion then for moving forward would be I would love to see, if possible, information about what we've done in the past when existing business, like I'm saying the last, since we put this chart into use, I guess, so the last just couple of years, which businesses have converted, what was the prior uses, and then the new use, how we charge them, like what, you know, just so we can kind of see how things have been done in other cases. And then I know that you said it's kind of all over the map in terms of trying to figure out what should be assessed. So I would also love to have like maybe a mock-up of this from a couple of different people not talking to each other. I don't know if everybody's already talked about it enough that that would be impossible, but like trying to figure out what they think the appropriate assessment would be, taking into account prior uses and just all of that, and see if just, yeah, and then we can digest all of that information and come to a decision, I'm hopeful. I know that's a lot. Would it be insane to try to have that for the next meeting? The only thing I'm worried about is giving us enough, like, buffer time if we need to gather additional information or have additional discussion about it or whatever. Or even if we can get all that ready by the next meeting, but we're not actually going to talk about it at the next meeting, and then that way that would give you guys some time to look over the data as well. If we have any questions, we could come prepared with them. If you guys had, like, rebuttal or anything to say about how you thought we should interpret the data, and then we would be prepared to make a decision at the second meeting in September, the 18th.
And I think we already have a list of all the businesses that have been in there in the past. I think most of the stuff that you're talking about there we already have. So
I don't just mean, like, businesses from this site. Like, I wanted to know how we treated other businesses around
the
city.
Businesses.
Yeah,
okay.
Just so we can kind of see, like, is there any consistency that we'd be able to then also apply here? Or if it's just all over the board, then, okay, we're just going to have to kind of make a decision the best way we think, you know, how, and that sort of thing. Does that seem doable? Like, to, I know it's a lot, but, or even to gather it in 2.5 or 3 weeks in order to give you guys still some time to look it over and provide your feedback on how you think it should be interpreted?
Yeah, that is definitely doable. I believe we pretty much already have the information at our hands. It's probably in her public information request packet. And I think that more than one of us has looked at that already.
Okay.
And it should be pretty easy to provide you with a snapshot of the last couple of years or even further back of what we have or haven't charged.
Okay. So what are folks' preference? Do we want to try to get it on the next agenda then? I think we have our public hearing for the budget then. But in years past, that's been sparsely attended. Shocking.
If that's agreeable to you, I think that would be best so that we do have time if there's some differences yet.
Some more maneuvering? Is that
Just as long as we have enough time for your deadline that we have to, like you said, you have to turn in the EDU, whatever.
Right.
For the end of the month. Because, yeah. The original, you guys were asking $79,000, and you guys wanted so much to, you know, by that day.
Yeah.
We don't have that pocket change.
Right.
No problem. Okay. Yeah, so my proposal then, and I can make this in a motion if you need me to, and, like, postponing the resolution or whatever, would be that we would have all the information that I listed included. I don't know if we're allowed to just include it in the packet or if it needs to be kept secret or whatever, but anyway, that it would be on the agenda for the September 4th meeting, so we would have another, we'd consider everything then. I would invite you guys, I would encourage us to provide a copy of whatever we're going to be looking at to the extent we can, redacted if needed, whatever, to you guys. So then if you want to provide any feedback about how you think we should be interpreting it, you've already provided some information, but just in case you had anything else to say about the stuff we're looking at. And then in theory, we'd make a decision on the 4th if everybody feels okay with the information we have, or if we have additional questions or due outs, it still gives us one more meeting. Does that sound okay?
I think so.
Okay.
Any questions?
No, just I hope you'll provide, you know, whatever you want us to consider. I mean, I know we have this, but if there's anything else that you guys want to provide.
So probably what we'll do to coordinate that is you can just, I think most of it's already come through the clerk's office, so we can just, you can make sure the clerk's office has what you want them to have. We'll also get our information from the clerk's office. If there's other things that we find that we need, we'll figure out where that's at and how to get it. But I think if we just route everything through the clerk's office, it's probably the cleanest way to do that. That sound reasonable? Okay. Okay, so the motion is to table.
I move we table resolution R51 2018 until the September 4th meeting.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to table resolution number R51-2018 until the September 4th meeting. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
That brings us to ordinances. 8A, consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-30. This is an ordinance of the City of Cuna, Idaho, annexing a portion of the southeast quarter of Section 13, Township 2, North Range 1 West, owned by Toll ID, ILLC, into the Cuna Municipal Irrigation District from the Boise-Cuna Irrigation District, changing the respective boundaries of said districts, declaring water rights appurtenant thereto are pooled for delivery purposes, directing that copies of this ordinance be recorded as provided by law, and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2018-30.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance number 2018-30. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2018-30.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2018-30. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-30.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve summary publication of ordinance number 2018-30. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries upon publication will become law. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2018-31, an ordinance of the City Council of Cuna, Idaho, amending Title 11, Chapter 2, Section 8, Part B, Cuna City Code, titled Restricted Parking in Residential Districts, to clarify that a violation of said part is a misdemeanor, and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2018-31.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2018-31. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2018-31.
Quick question.
Second. Yep.
Oh, yes. Just a quick question.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. You're fine.
Are we having an issue with people parking in residential, or what brought this about to clarify we had to make this a misdemeanor or wanted to continue it as a misdemeanor? Is there something that brought this up?
I would imagine it's a code enforcement issue. I hadn't heard about it before, but
no one knows, Warren. We're just doing it.
I know we were having a lot of like semis in that, parking in residential, on residential streets or local streets. And they were arguing with us about being allowed there or not, and it's a certain weight that's allowed on local streets.
Okay.
That's the only thing I recall on this. I'm sorry, Richard.
The way I read it is Title 11, motor vehicles and traffic. stopping, standing, or parking, restricted parking in residential districts, that includes on residential streets, a misdemeanor offense. Where does, I mean, the detailed breakdown of that? I guess I worry looking at it at a high level, maybe I'm looking too much into the details, making it a misdemeanor offense on residents that park in residential parking.
I just want to clarify that it's parking. Are you taking issue with the definition of recreational vehicle, or what are you taking issue with?
No. I'm just looking further on down about, I guess I need more clarification. Restricted parking in residential districts. It was breaking down ordinance section 1, title 11, chapter 2, section 8, part 5. Is hereby amended as follows, and it breaks it down to motor vehicles and traffic, stopping, standing, or parking, restricted parking in residential districts. Does mm-hmm. this only relate to recreational?
Yes. Okay. Use of a recreational vehicle or a trailer as a temporary dwelling. So it very specifically only applies to vehicles being used as a temporary dwelling.
Okay.
For more than 7 days.
I know what this is.
Now I remember what it was.
Do you want to come up?
And the light came on.
That's what happened.
Okay.
Chief's going to fill us in.
Thanks, Chief.
Chief, thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, members of council. I'm John McDaniel, for the record, Chief of Police. This came up as a request from one of my deputies fairly recently, where we, without having the misdemeanor ability to cite somebody into court, it really limits our options for, we've had a couple that I think we responded 7 or 8 times to a house that somebody was living in the trailer. A family member was trying to do a favor for another family member, and it got to be where there were disturbing the peace issues, again, multiple responses by us. And so looking at the code, it looked like compared to others that were of that type of violation where they're living, refusing to vacate. Like in this instance, for example, the party was, there were two different people, including the land owner that offered to even pay first month's rent and even offered to move the trailer. And it was really becoming a nuisance problem where, again, we were called multiple times. And so we just thought, compared to some of the other codes, that the misdemeanor was more the appropriate, and in talking with Richard about this, it seemed like this was a code that would be more appropriate to be a misdemeanor, to where we could take that action if deemed necessary. Somebody's refusing to be reasonable. Okay.
Okay. Makes sense.
Thank you, Chief.
Move we approve ordinance 2018-31.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2018-31. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhart?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2018-31.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve a summary publication of ordinance number 2018-31. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries, and that becomes law upon publication. That is basically all we have on the agenda. I guess an update for the notorious smell issue. We made a couple of the first time we made any kind of an announcement on that was it was a matter of trying to find the location and make sure that it was not harmful or toxic to the public. We did that. I contacted the owners of the business and asked them if there was anything in particular they wanted me to add into our announcement. They just said that they were trying to mitigate the problem and that they wanted to be good neighbors, so we added that into our announcement. And then a little later on in that same afternoon, they came down with their own announcement that basically negated everything that I said. So we kind of kept going through it. The county commissioners became involved. They wanted us to do a second announcement after we had heard some more from DEQ. So we made that second announcement based on their request. That prompted a visit to me from the owner that was a PR person, I guess. And we had a nice discussion. It didn't get bad or anything, but basically when we made that announcement, I really got the feeling that we were going to start having some issues if we kept talking about it. So the pretense was that we couldn't prove that all of the smell was coming from there. It was pretty obvious that most of it was, but we needed to prove all of it. So we just kind of quit announcing. We put it in the hands of DEQ. They're the governing body. Actually, the Ada County Commissioners are the ones that can take away their CUPs and authorization to operate out there. And DEQ is the governing body that takes care of those smell issues, odor issues, and that type of thing. So we put it basically into their hands. I met with Aaron. What's his last name? Chef? Yeah, anyway, so he works for DEQ. I met with him yesterday. We had a discussion about it. They were going to do an updated post. I don't know, did we get that posted on our page today? So, Aaron Shep, yeah. So we decided to do one more because it was now from DEQ. It's not our announcement. We're just posting what DEQ posted. I'm kind of hopeful that it just kind of gets taken care of. But basically what happened is when they shut down that pond, it killed the ecosystem within that pond, which created some blooms. And these blooms are apparently the things that open up and make a horrendous smell. It's a lot easier to kill an ecosystem than it is to grow one. So it takes a little while to grow this ecosystem. That's why it's taken so long for this all to go away. Basically, with our weather pattern, we're having kind of an inversion in the summertime. It keeps, at night and early morning, it keeps all the stuff low and doesn't keep it mixed up. So that's why the smell is worse through the night and in the morning and then dissipates in the day as it warms up. So that's kind of where we're at with it. We've heard estimates from anywhere from a couple of days to several weeks before that corrects itself. And then they're going to be working with that company on different ways of operating. So that's kind of where we're at with that right now. Everybody who has looked at any of that has stated that there is no danger. It stinks. It's irritating. Some people are claiming that they don't feel well because of smelling it all the time. That's not something that we are willing to argue against. So I think if you smell anything bad enough for long enough, it's going to make you not feel good. So whether people are getting headaches from it and all of that, I don't know for sure. But as far as making it, making you really ill and making you go down, if that was the case, that people that work right at that pond would be basically the canaries in the coal mine kind of situation. So none of that's going on. None of them are falling ill from it. They're not wearing extra respirators or anything like that. So we've still been assured that it's safe. So that's kind of where we're at with that. And it has been fun. I don't know. I don't think we got much in the way of calls today, did we?
Seems like it has been better, like the last two nights at least. One or two nights, at least in my house.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of a breeze, so I think that helps, but who knows. Anyway, we don't want to play with those blooms anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
And we did hear from Council Member Cardoza. He went through the, I'll let you say what he said.
Megan Cardoza, his daughter called today, and his surgery was successful. He was medicated comfortably in a room at the hospital. He's supposed to stay down for about a week and be iced, but she expects that he probably won't mind that directive. But, and he's in good spirits. So it seems to have been successful, so we should see him marching around here soon.
Thanks, Chris.
And he was medicated, so that means that had he been here tonight, he would have been a real hoot. All right, did anybody else have anything? Okay, well, that's the end, so meeting is adjourned. Thank you all very much.